Welcome to Irish Voices. Taken from over 40 hours of interviews, this 30-minute snapshot charts the history of the London St. Patrick's Day Parade. Sit back and hear a selection of our wonderful voices before diving into the rest of the project.
My experience of St. Patrick's Day has evolved, I suppose, over the years. Growing up in London, we would wear a little sprig of often withered shamrock on our lapels going to school, sent over from Uncle Mick living in Galway. And my dad got, obviously, the biggest chair because he was the real Irishman from County Monaghan. And we were the mini Irishmen in our little piece of shamrock. And we would go to Mass. That was another thing that you did on St. Patrick's Day. And also there was the St. Patrick's Day Parade. I don't have glorious memories of St. Patrick's Day parades. My abiding memory is walking on cobbled roads somewhere in the centre of London, going towards Trafalgar Square in the drizzling rain, feeling cold, wearing a navy blue gabardine mac over my red wool Irish dancing costume. So it felt a little bit of a waste. You couldn't really see my lovely dress. And marching behind adults carrying a banner saying the Clerkin School of Irish Dancing. And we would be marching there with my parents and my grandfather and probably some parents from my mother's Irish dancing school. I seem to remember there were some older dancers. Maybe when we got to Trafalgar Square, they may have given what we called an exhibition. We would say giving an exhibition of Irish dancing.
It's a long time ago since I... it would have been in the 60s that I walked with my own dancing class, which I taught. But prior to that, I can remember we danced... Frank and I walked in the parade when we belonged to Mr. Smith's class, Charlie Smith's class, dancing class, when we were pupils, and that would have been in the early 50s. I can remember 1952 walking it and gathering at Southwark Cathedral, which had been the resting place of Terence McSweeney, the Lord Mayor of Cork, who died on hunger strike. Yes. And yes, and that was it. And again, this was in Southwark Cathedral, the Catholic Cathedral, which had been bombed during the war, and so it was roofless and hadn't been repaired. So we would stand in this, it was quite atmospheric, stand in the ruins of this cathedral and while Mass was offered, yes.
Patrick's Day, we went to, the first year we were there, we went to the Patrick's Day Parade up London, and there weren't very many floats there, but I remember the Dagenham Girls Piper Band, and there was a Fife and Drum Band as well. And I remember we were walking along, and I saw this man sitting on the sidewalk, and I said to John, "That's Mike Milligan." And he said, "Yes." I said, "Look what he's saying, the rosary." And he said, so we came up, and Spike Milligan was saying, "Take the pill, take the pill, take the pill." And I looked at John and I said, "What's the pill?" He said, "I don't know." That was the first. We went to the Westminster Cathedral, and the Mass was in Gaelic. And after that, there was people dancing around the square and that, you know, everyone was gathering, chatting and all. And then we came home, that was it.
Well, I can recollect coming over from Ireland in 1969, actually 20th of February 1969, arrived in Willesden, and the first St. Patrick's Day was the following month of March. A friend of mine in the Ex-Association asked me to come along to the parade. His name was Peter White, and he was treasurer of the association, so yes, I went out along just for the John Ian Wickford marching in the parade, and lo and behold, he produced this banner and he said, "Here, young fella, carry that banner." He said, and I said, "Oh, sure." He said, "No," he said, "I want you to carry it." And another friend, Jim Dahl, was the other man they carried with me. That was my first involvement in the Patrick's Day Parade, and I've been involved ever since.
I remember once John Lennon was on one, yes, through London, and he must have attracted quite a bit of police attention. That would have been the early 70s. Yeah. Yes, they were in the 60s, yes, and it would have been sometime in the 70s already, before the banning of marches. I had seen him also on a civil rights march, and he had attracted a lot of police attention. And he had written a song about the Troubles that never really got distributed here. I think, and I might be wrong, that somehow or another it was banned from the airwaves. Like, don't quote me on this, but perhaps it was banned from the BBC airwaves. Yeah, so I remember seeing him and being absolutely fascinated that he still kept his Irish roots. Yeah.
We stayed in the Horse Guards Hotel, right in the centre, really. I think actually very close to Scotland Yard. And I got up early in the morning, about 9 o'clock, opened the curtains and looked down, and there was a lot of activity going on in the street, and there were three lorries. And I think one of them was a Murphy's, but I can't remember what the other two were. And there were three lorries, and the guys were erecting scaffolding on the back of these three lorries. And there were about 10, 15 men and women. And they were surrounded, though, by 150 police. They were incredible. Of course, one has to recall, at that time, there were all kinds of difficulties going on with IRA bombings and threats and so on. But to me, I looked out and I couldn't believe this. You know, here was these guys, and they were sticking up their little tricolour flags onto the scaffolding, the bits of bunting and so on. But this was the St. Patrick's Day Parade then. Right. And I got my wife up very quickly, and I said, come on, we have to get out here and support these guys. And so we got up quickly, dressed, vanished down, no breakfast, anything, and out, and walked down to Mass in Westminster at, I think it was 10:30, I can't remember what time it was, behind this little ragtag of a parade. And we were outnumbered 10-1, I would say, by all of the police and people keeping an eye and taking photographs. I always remember, I said, gosh, where is my photograph going to appear? And that was my first. So that's 1983. So that's 30 years ago? It is, yeah. And so that's the first. That was the first kind of significant involvement with it.
But I can remember people saying, no, no, be no parade, it's too risky. Looking back on it, it probably would have been the best thing we ever did was to keep the parade going. You know, but I think management on the senior committee people decided, no, it's too risky. So,
why was it seen as too risky?
Well, because I suppose the people at the IRA might have been able to do something. We did have them, of course, here during the London Irish Festival. On a couple of occasions, 2 years only, I think it was, where we had probably one of the biggest riots in London, in the park down here, with the police turning up on their horsebacks. Seemed to be just hundreds of soldiers around and our policemen. But a few of the boys were prepared to stand in and go against them, you know, so. They were not part of any of the associations, not part of any group that was involved in the festival. They were there to probably show their strength that, you know, we are still around. And I think probably that was the same going back to the days of the parade. They didn't want them getting involved in that. Well, it would have given a bad name. And the management probably, they were wise to say, look, forget it. But again, I can't remember how many years that it was actually abandoned, but it was.
When we went into Oxford Street, there was a lot of, I don't know what it is about Oxford Street. It's not like New York where you go, where you feel every sound is going to reverberate off the tall buildings. But somehow or another, when we got into Oxford Street, you could hear us so easily. The wide open spaces down when you came from Green Park, that seemed to be very wide and open. And then you come to Oxford Street, which is much more containing of a crowd. And the police were all lined up against the windows. And when I said to one of them, what are you expecting us to do? He said, we have to mind the windows. So that would be Selfridges and John Lewis and all that. And there was somebody next to me who had her shopping, and she had come from Ireland to see her sister and took the opportunity of shopping. Then she saw the parade and joined, and a policeman said, oh, I want to see what's in there. And I said, oh, for God's sake, do we have to be harassed all of the time? But anyway, yes, we all spread out the shopping bags then between us, and that's just a little anecdote. It was funny having engagements with people. But one thing I will say, everybody was happy. They were all happy, and I wasn't unhappy.
Well, I mean, it wasn't our doing. It was the police. The police. We had to go down, cap in hand. I don't like using that phrase, like, you know, but we had to go down to every year when we had the parade. We had to go and meet the guards. And we had a wolfhound in it once, and, well, not once, twice, three or four times. This copper said to me, he said, what are you going to do with the wolfhound? He said, do you think I'm going to carry him? I said, or what? He was not amused. But we had occasion as well where they wanted the parade to be preceded by an unmarked police car. People were saying, yes, yeah, they're right. I said, no, blankety blank, it's not right, you know. Why should we have our parade being, you know, marshalled by an unmarked police car? We won a day. Well, I won a bloody day because, you know, we're not doing it. Simple as that.
When did that happen? Do you know?
Oh, I'm not sure what years. It was the time of the PTA as well, you know. And strangely, I'm known as a pacer, and the reason we got the name of a pacer was in the first instance, it used to be in the Westminster Cathedral. We used to go from Horse Guards Parade to Westminster Cathedral, and we had to get Westminster Cathedral by about 10 to 12. So they needed a pacer. But I got the job, and dead on 10 to 12, we're down at Westminster Cathedral. And I was thinking to myself, you know, sometimes I'm walking along, I'm walking down the street, and I'm looking at all the places, you know, and you think to yourself, I wonder, is there anybody up there with a gun and everything? It's, you know, that was the way it was at the time. But we never let it show. And then we have the mass, and there's a bit of a problem with that, because what used to happen was the audience from the 10 o'clock mass didn't all leave the church, or didn't all leave the cathedral. So it was packed to overflowing. And we helped with the collection as well on the day, like, you know. They didn't let us do too often, because they'd see how much money they were getting. But, yeah, there were tough times. But they were good times. You know, I mean, the 70s, 80s and 90s. I remember coming out of the Buffalo in Camden Town. The Buffalo had it was a dance hall. It had the roughest reputation of any dance hall in London. And this at 3 o'clock in the morning, having danced to Joe Loss and Rose Brennan.
Well, the more elderly parts of the community are right at the heart of the parade. As I'm sure you know, the parade's roots are with the Council of Irish County Associations. So, and I have a lot of experience of working with that group because they're based here. So that's another area where kind of the two things interweave. So the Council of Irish County Associations were central to the establishment of the Irish Centre, and they set up the parade. And they still are represented on the advisory forum, and they kind of informally take a lead on the parade as well. Historically, the parade's main content, to use a modern term, were the county associations. So the Kerry flag and hundreds of Kerry people, the Cork flag. So I think, right, in my experience, the whole Irish community scene in London, you're always trying to balance roots and relevance. So you're dealing with this group that's not homogenous in any way, that's very diverse, that has many of whom have very passionate, deep perceptions of Irishness and Irish culture and how they're represented and all that kind of thing. And it's trying to balance those two things of, you know, the fact that the county association set this up. And I have massive respect for the fact that they walked through London at a time when it was much more complex to be Irish and to be waving an Irish flag. And I'm talking 50s, 60s and troubles. And there were some years that didn't happen, but, you know, much, much more complicated, much more courage and commitment needed than me going down there saying, well, will I book this band or that band?
And we always had a nice young person carrying St. Patrick's banner, somebody else carrying the tricolour. And we were always led by a wolfhound, an Irish wolfhound. And one year we couldn't get a wolfhound. And I rang the Irish guards and asked if we could borrow their wolfhound. And he said, terribly sorry, madam, he said, but Malik is on leave in Cork. But anyway, the Dublin Association lady was in Parliament Hill Fields walking, and she saw this man with a wolfhound, and she went up to him. She said, she told him, well, you know, we won. He said, fantastic. He was Jewish. He said, fantastic. I've always wanted to belong to an illegal organisation. And he came with a wolfhound that year. Since it's become like a commercial entity, we have the one that's the Irish rugby. That wolfhound comes. He's absolutely lovely dog, and he's dressed in the Irish rugby coat on and all that.
The Irish Guards have a special St. Patrick's Day parade, and it's very formal, especially in the beginning part. And as always in this country, formality is done in a beautiful way. It's pageantry and anything like that is what they do best. And this St. Patrick's Day parade particularly is no exception. You have all of the men in the grey tunics, overcoats with the high woolly hats, as I'll call them. I don't know what their formal name is. And you have some of the older soldiers, who includes Jackie's father, who were involved in the Second World War. And they go along behind the parade. So in addition, the music, the quality of the musicianship at that particular parade is outstanding. There is a brass instruments playing, and they play it absolutely exquisitely played. I mean, I'm not normally a brass fan per se, but these are totally wonderful musicians, and it's really, really beautifully done. So then there's Shamrock, presented usually by a member of the royal family or of somebody, some dignitary of some kind. It's a different person usually every year, and they sometimes have the Irish Wolfhound, this enormous dog that I've never seen in Ireland in my life, and the only time I've ever seen it is in London at this parade. And he'll have his little jacket on and all that, and then we go down to the cenotaph, and it's the whole experience is very, very moving, and it's a very devout experience, I think. So afterwards, when all of that is over, everybody unwinds, and it's all very nice, and we have all the tourists following us, taking photographs of us, and most particularly taking photographs of the parade and the soldiers in their uniform and so on.
Yes.
But it is a beautiful experience.
¶¶ my grandfather was only half alive from my earlier Melville version. That was another great event, started in 1974. The first 2 years was in Stamford Bridge and Chelsea Football Ground, and then it moved after 2 years to Roundwood Park. It was good to move it. It was great. Now it was an open spaces, and people could walk around, visit the different county stalls, and get involved. There was a Cayley stage. There was a main stage. There was Irish dancing. There was every kind of thing was happening. It was a great day for the Irish. That day. We always looked to the first Sunday in July was a thing we always marked in the calendar.
First of those things actually took place in Stamford Bridge, in the football ground, which is probably about mid-70s, I think, 74, 75, 76, somewhere around there, so I was only 10. It was a fantastic day out, and I'm a Chelsea supporter anyway, so to be out on the pitch and stuff like that, and it was, I think it was a big success. So the next year, or the year or two afterwards, they went to Ramble Park, and they were huge. They were massive, massive, like thousands and thousands of people. We used to go to coach up from Harlow for a good few years, and then the guys I mentioned earlier from Lakenheath, the Irish guys would come down from Lakenheath, which is up kind of Newmarket way. They'd pick us up in Harlow, so we'd get on their double-decker bus with all their American beer and stuff. So that was part of the double-decker bus in Roundwood Park. And then over the years we'd drive down just in our car, and we'd drive in and have a picnic, you know, just to the side of the big hill there. And there'd be thousands, you know, if you stood on the main stage to take a picture, as far as you could see up the hill, there was just thousands and thousands. And then behind the hill there was more, there was like gate pitches and another stage, and behind you there was a little avenue of, that's where they had all the sort of county stalls. And you couldn't move through there, you know, if you were at one end and you wanted to take a picture of somebody at the far end, it'd take you half an hour to get there, just to the volume of people, you know. It was great, you know. It's
like your club, your local club, around the park. Everybody you'd meet there. You'd always meet somebody for a long chat, and, you know.
Yeah.
And even with the VIPs, distinguished guests, so to speak, you could mix in with them and all that. So. Yes, at the end of the day, you'd say, what a day has been.
Mm.
You know, tea, in the tents, tea or whatever, it'd be a tent or... But I'll give you a cup of tea or any of the tents, and then a cake or something like that, and let's have a chat with people. It's just a great place.
Mm-hmm.
So then around 2000, when the GLA set up and Ken Livingstone was mayor, suddenly there was an announcement, I don't know whether it was 2001 or 2002, but suddenly there was going to be a St. Patrick's Day concert in Trafalgar Square. And I just thought, oh well, I'll just have to go down and see what that might be like. And it was amazing. It was before the work was done to Trafalgar Square, and the top part of the road was still open to traffic. And the idea was you just crossed on the crossing and you went into the square, and there was a stage and there was a few bits and pieces round. And it was starting at 12 o'clock, and I thought, sure, there was three or four of us, and we'll just go down and kind of, you know, and see how it goes and see what it's like. And by about 1 o'clock, you couldn't get in. Nobody could move in the square. It was absolutely chock-a-block with people. And so then you wanted to get out to go and meet whoever else you were meeting, and you had to queue to get up the stairs, and the next thing, the traffic had stopped coming up that way, and then it was only going down the southbound bit on the east side. And then by the time that we were going home in the evening, everything was closed from Trafalgar Square, from Tottenham Court Road Station southwards, Charing Cross Road, the whole lot was closed, and even Whitehall, I think, or maybe the southern, maybe Whitehall was still open. But what was clear was that nobody had any idea the numbers of Irish people who would identify and who would come in. And we just waltzed all over the centre of London for, you know, everywhere you went, we'd just go and get a sandwich or a cup of tea, or maybe we'd go into the pub, and everywhere was just all full of all these Irish people. And they all had, you know, people had those great big hats and all kinds of stuff. But the thing was, it was so good-humoured, and it was so low-key. And people were just giggling, because it was like, ha-ha, you know, we've just stopped the whole of London.
It was one of the most stunning and amazing days of my entire life, and I still look at it, back at it now, and have a big smile on my face, because the parade that had traditionally taken place assembled outside Westminster Cathedral down near Victoria and then came up through the centre of town essentially to the embankment. And we were going to follow the same route, but rather than go to the embankment, the parade was going to come into Trafalgar Square, where there would be the music festival to conclude the event. And we had a division of labour amongst the various people from the GLA. And myself and a colleague were in charge of Trafalgar Square. And Redmond and a couple of other people working with him were down at Westminster Cathedral. And we were on walkie-talkies. And Redmond was on the walkie-talkie back to us saying, there's just so many people here, no one can move. It was rammed. We couldn't see it. We were up at Trafalgar Square and we said, well, the problem is, Redmond, we're rammed here as well, because huge numbers of people had come straight to Trafalgar Square, and all the way down Whitehall you could see people lining the streets with their green balloons and wearing their green hats, and you know, it was like a sea of green, both sides of Whitehall, as far as you could see. And the parade set off at 12. And we were in touch. And I said to Redmond, you're going to have to come up here, because I don't know what we're going to do. Because by that time, the Trafalgar Square was absolutely full. And we could see the parade advancing towards us, absolutely filling Whitehall as it came up the road. And the police started to panic. And I don't know if you know, but when they have a major organisation, they have these levels of command: gold command, silver command, bronze command. And gold command is back at headquarters, silver command and bronze command are who you have actually with you. And the policeman said to me, I've called gold command, which you knew meant that there was a real problem. And this big policeman arrived on his motorbike from Scotland Yard. He said, well, we've got to close the whole thing down. I said, what do you mean you've got to close the whole thing down? He said, well, with too many people. You've got a full Trafalgar Square and you've got this whole parade of people coming up the road. Where are you going to put them? They won't fit. You know, people will be killed. You'll have a crushing problem. So I'm on the walkie-talkie to Redmond saying, Redmond, you've got to get here. The police are going to say they're going to close it down. So he came rushing up. He was high as a kite because he said, people were crying as you came up the street. And he said, the kind of thing that people were saying is, I've waited 30 years for this, for Irish people to be recognised, and thanking Ken for doing it, and that sort of thing. And so he was quite choked up. And he spoke to the Gold Command. And he said, well, we can't close it down. What are we going to do? And Redmond said, we'll send it down Pall Mall, down the Mall, because you couldn't send it down Pall Mall, that was around with people too. We said, and the Gold Command said, but you have to get permission from Buckingham Palace before you can go down the Mall. And Redmond said, well, are you going to ring them? And he said, but where do they go? The policeman said, well, where do they go when they go down the Mall? And Redmond said, well, sadly, you have to make sacrifices in some situations, which is what you did, because if we hadn't sent these float, because these were lorries and everything as well that were supposed to come round Trafalgar Square. So we sent this whole parade with all the lorries down the Mall, totally without permission. Obviously, most of the people then left and came and found their way into the square, and the ones that couldn't went off to a pub and that sort of thing. But it was absolutely remarkable, really remarkable. And the emotion of it was just incredible.
People were just taken aback by the sheer numbers that had turned up. You know, it was just incredible. you know, people in tears. You know, I feel a bit emotional thinking about it myself now. It was, you know, people were, you know, people were in tears on the march because the route was lined with people with flags and the tricolour flying, you know, over Trafalgar Square where Irish marches had been banned in the past. And, yeah, I think there was a massive sense of sort of pride and change, really, you know, and that things were moving forward and they weren't going to be moving backwards.
It was great. It was not only, you know, was it a great day to be out there and meeting all these people, but also it was a time where we all came together and people we mightn't have seen for months would all join us on the parade. And it was great to sort of bring everybody together, and it was young and old and children and, you know, just all meeting up and sort of, you know, you mightn't see them for a year again, because that was just, it was just a great meeting point. For example, we always hook up with these people from Montserrat who have their own float on the parade, because obviously Irish people were sent as indentured labourers to Montserrat, and like at work we even had a cook who was this black woman from Montserrat whose name was O'Neill.
Wow.
So, and they're fantastic. They have this great float and they're always dancing all over the place, you know. Mm-hmm. So we kind of hook up with them every year. So, I mean, that is the first time I've actually seen a whole group of people all from Montserrat who identify with their Irishness to the extent that they have a float and they bring it on the parade.
Your first St. Patrick's parade was about 2006, I think, or 6 or 7, I think it's 2006. And we had just made links with the Haringey Centre, and we celebrated St. Patrick's anyway, separately to the Irish parade, and then we realised that the Haringey Centre was going on the Irish parade, so we asked if we could join them and be part of their parade, and we've been every year since then with them, doing the whole march and soaking up the whole Irish thing. We have from Munster, we have what we call our masquerade, and our masquerades normally join in on the march and do the dance in the flamboyant dresses and things. So that normally steals the show. Yes.
I'm just really happy that there is a day for Irish people that includes everybody else as well, and that we can bring all our friends along and get them to sort of experience sort of Irish culture and see the positives in that. And long may it continue. And I'm quite pleased that actually Boris has continued the parade, because we were a bit concerned that, you know, Ken had started it and would this disallow it. But I'm glad to see that Boris recognises the importance of Irish people in London and their contribution. Go!